2011. My name is Doug Kelly. So good to have you, and I'm here, of course, with Grant Rubendust.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's nice to have you with us tonight.
Yes, and tonight we are honored to have Clifford Clift, the International Director of MUFON, with us, and been wanting to get Cliff or the International Director on, somebody from MUFON, for a long time. We've actually had a couple of field investigators or so forth. But
yeah, that's a while back.
But yeah, and Morgan's been on and a couple of times. So, you know, it's a great honor to have Cliff. If you are listening to this live broadcast, we will welcome your questions in the Blog Talk Radio chat room. We also welcome our listeners on the Inception Radio Network as well as in that chat room. And if you're listening to the archive, glad to have you here as well. So tonight we're going to have an interesting dialogue. We're going to sit back. We're going to chat and talk about things and ways that we can not only improve the field, but also what's gone on in the field for these past few decades. So, without any further ado, by the way, if you do want to call in, Jamie Havokin, of course, screening our calls. You can call in. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. And Cliff, International Director of MUFON. Clifford Cliff, welcome to the program.
Welcome,
Thank
sir.
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate being on with you, gentlemen. Thank you so much for asking me.
Yes, it's well, thanks so much for agreeing, and you know, and thanks so much for settling for $500,000 instead of $1 million to get you on. You know, that really
don't
helps.
But don't tell anybody else, Cliff.
Well, I do have my prize.
So, Cliff, you've been the international director for MUFON now. How long now?
Since January 2010.
Okay, so a little over a year, year and a half ish, and you are the fourth. Or fifth?
Yes. The first one was Walt Andrus.
Mm-hmm.
Second was John Schuessler. Third was James Carrion. And then myself.
And here you are.
Pardon me?
And here you are.
Yes, that was after 42 years. I'm the 42-year-old. well, maybe not. I'm a little older than that. ID for MUFON, there's been four of us in 42 years.
Yeah, and that's actually a great track record.
So, Cliff, did you work your way up through the ranks at MUFON?
Well, not really. I joined MUFON in 1995 and became a subscriber member and an investigator. And then in 2000, I was appointed to the board of directors. Then in 2010, I was appointed as international director. So I've been in charge of symposiums, and I've been involved with financial. One of the things that we try to do on the board of directors is have people come on with a business background, because the business involved with MUFON is significant. Trying to keep. Go ahead.
No, I just said definitely. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where the board of directors is a business board, and actually the board of directors don't really get involved with a lot of UFO activity, but the organization and trying to maintain the integrity of it, which we think we're doing, and we try to keep all of the directors, not the board of directors, but the directors of investigations, the director of whatever it might be, involved. And these are all volunteer spots, which is really absolutely amazing to me, because I've been on a board of directors with hospice and the Boy Scouts and various other nonprofit organizations, but very honestly, MUFON volunteers are just absolutely amazingly qualified and capable to do the things that they're doing.
And that's good to hear, you know, and that's one thing that I have noticed, you know, about MUFON too. And, you know, I mean, we are trying to build a similar organization, although we're not only focused on ufology, but we're trying to build a similar organization. And I'm sure you can attest to this. It's unbelievably difficult to make it work, to keep it going, to make it fly, to get people interested. And I've always, well, I've admired the sheer number of volunteers that MUFON has garnered over the years. Of course, you've been around a while, and Paranexus hasn't, but I am going to take this opportunity to put it out there, because this is a good opportunity. You know, we are looking for folks as well to volunteer, to get involved, to help. You know, our mission is education. I know that's part of MUFON's mission. And so we welcome people. You know, if you're into this, into the field, whether it's parapsychology, ufology, cryptozoology, whatever, you know, come and get involved. You know, don't be shy. Come and get involved. We're looking for sharp people. Okay, so there was my, you know, 20-second commercial. But I've admired you guys' ability to get the volunteers and keep them going.
Well, thanks, Chuck. The thing about it is the 40 years history has lent itself to the credibility of MUFON within the eyes of the public, because we have an archive of approximately 30,000 sighting reports, and that's phenomenal documentation. And because of that, and the field investigators that we have, this number grows exponentially. It's just the more investigators, the more sighting reports. We're averaging 500 sighting reports to us a month now. And of that, probably 400 of them can scientifically be explained as natural phenomenon, planetary, something astronomical. But that leaves 100, and maybe 50 of that 100 could be explained if we had more information. But there's always 50 that really are eye-openers.
Hmm. And that's been our experience, too. You know, we've talked about that so many times on the show over the last 3.5 years about, you know, psychological reasons, natural explanations. The majority of them can be explained one way or another. So you have been involved since 1995, which is a good 16 years anyway. And so tell us about, in your opinion, over the 40 years of MUFON, over the 64 years, you know, in the modern UFO era, you know, where have we come from? I mean, how far have we come? Have we made any progress?
That, Doug, is a very good question. And that's a yes and a no. And I'll say no, it hasn't, because we still haven't been able to scientifically sit down and investigate and or talk to ETs. We don't have the craft to go over. But yes, we have come a long way. We have noticed the technology that they use seems to get better and better. What I mean is, back in the 40s and 50s, they didn't seem to be as sophisticated craft as they are today. We had very few, if any, triangle-shaped craft reported to us back into the UFO field in the 40s and 50s. We had a lot of cars than vehicles that were stopped. Do you have time for me to tell a story about
one? Absolutely. We have an hour. Yeah. Well, we have till the top of the hour, so go ahead.
Okay. I had a real good friend. I still have a good friend. And he used to work in the oil fields when he was a young man, as I did. going to college, I would go out and work on drilling rigs. Well, he was out working for a oil field logging company. What they do is they drop an electric or a nuclear device on a cable down the drill hole after the well is drilled to check the formations and get a recording so that they know where to perforate the ground and set the pipe in, that type thing. So it's kind of a waiting game. He went out on a location in northwest Colorado, which is over by Steamboat Springs in the ski area, and it was in the summer on a high plat mountaintop, not above timberline, but it was a mountain. And they were drilling a well there. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with these drilling rigs, but they are probably 90, 100 foot tall. They have usually three big Jimmy diesel engines that run the mud pumps and the draw works and all the things that are necessary to keep the engine going. They have their own generators for electricity because they're out in the middle of nowhere. Well, he had rigged his equipment up and was waiting for him to come out of the hole with the pipe so he could drop his stuff in. It was about midnight, and they thought it would be 2 or 3 in the morning, so he thought he'd catch a nap. He went to bed, and by 11, he said, and about midnight, he said, everything got totally quiet. Now, there were about 10 people on the drill site at that time, the four members on the drilling crew, him and some company men and geologists. He said it just got absolutely quiet. Of course, when you're hearing all of that noise from those big Jimmy diesel engines roaring, when it goes quiet, it wakes you up if you're mm-hmm. sleeping. So he woke up and he looked out and everything was blue. And it was just, he said it was just absolutely, totally quiet, no sound at all. So he went outside and everybody was out there walking around on the ground or on the drilling rig. And there was a guy up in the derrick working with the pipe. They were up there and nobody was talking. They all just stood there and looked at each other. He said within about 10 minutes, the blue light was gone. Those three Jimmy diesel engines fired right up and started just as if they had never, ever stopped. Hmm. Now, people that are and have been around diesel engines know that to start a big Jimmy diesel engine takes 10 or 15 minutes or 20 or maybe half hour back then in the 1960s. So those guys all looked at each other, never said anything, and went back, and he went to bed, and the rest of them walked off and did everything. He said it was like everybody was mesmerized.
Hmm.
So the point that I'm making is we have learned over the years that the electromagnetic aspect of these craft are have something to – they're able to do something to our equipment, which is now what we find with the military when they go in to do a war. They set these electromagnetic devices off and it cancels all of the electronic equipment and communication centers of the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So we have learned a lot, and I think the military has learned a lot. So this is, we have learned a lot. Now, they have progressed from stopping cars now, although from time to time we do get reports of that, to more sophisticated ways of moving around. And we got a lot of reports of them where they were landing and taking sample of the entities, would get out and take samples of the soil. They're not doing that as much now. They know what they need to know about us, apparently.
Hmm.
So this has been a very exciting thing for us to learn that they are improving along with us, and they seem to be just a step ahead of us every dadgum corner we go around.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned that their technology seems to have improved like you might expect. I mean, and the thought just hit me when you were saying that a moment or two ago that would that be an argument for the technology being ours, black ops, perhaps?
No, I think it's a possibility, Doug. I think that is a strong possibility. But back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, we may have thought about these things, but we did not have them. Had we had them and developed by the 40s, 50s, 60s, we would have been using them in in war, obviously. Mm-hmm. The stealth bomber and the stealth fighter kept under wraps, what, since the 70s or 80s. And they started using them as soon as the first opportunity arose, and that's what would have happened. So to me, it precludes the fact that this could have been black ops back then. Now, we do know that a lot of the black ops craft that are available today are being reported as UFOs. And some of the pictures I've seen of these black ops craft, if you saw one of them in the sky, it was coming towards you, you would swear it was a UFO.
Hmm. Interesting.
Is it because their configuration is totally different, Cliff?
Yes, yeah.
So they're more like flying platforms as opposed to traditional configuration of aircraft?
That's correct, yeah. They're not like to go to the airport and see the 747s taken off or anything like that. No, these are very, very sophisticated technology with stealth capabilities.
What's MUFON's stance in regards to, you know, there's been, you know, in UFO folklore, as I know you're well aware of, there's been whistleblowers who have claimed there's been 57 different species visiting the Earth or 9 different ones. Or does MUFON have any official stance on that, or do they, you know, even kind of lean in trying to, you know, make any sense of that?
Well, yes, we have. What we try to do is to put the sighting reports together to correlate them to see what the ETs are really like. We do feel very comfortably that there's 6 different species or cultures, I don't know how you would say it about them, that are visiting here. But beyond that, it's a guess for me.
Any ideas or any... You got harbor any of your own personal theories about what the agenda is?
Well, my belief is that these people are so much further advanced than we are that they have probably learned to live peacefully to some degree, or developed some way to allow others to be. And I think that's what they're up to. I think there is some type of galactic law that says don't interfere with emerging cultures unless they are a detriment to the universe.
And we're all screwed.
Well, that's pretty close to what I'm thinking, too, because, you know, they say, what the heck are those guys doing, dropping A-bombs, blowing each other up, shooting each other? We're not going to let them in space.
Yeah,
well, in comparison to, you know, I think what most people have a tendency not to do is to think that, well, you know, they're a couple hundred years ahead of us, and Doug and I have kicked this one around. I think we got to start thinking, what if they're a couple million years ahead of us? And then when you start thinking in that terms, you know, their technology, like I think Carl Sagan said, could be like magic to us.
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. I am just amazed at what we don't know, but what we feel like we know. Our laws of physics have reached a point now where it's pretty hard to deny. Well, you can't deny the laws of physics, but their abilities exceed ours, and they're probably not defying the laws of physics, but they are having more advanced ways of developing the physics that we know.
Well, the other interesting thing about, you talk about peaceful societies, I mean, what do they do when our jets approach? They split, you know, they run, they don't engage. I know there's stories of them engaging and all that, but what do you think about that? I mean, is that your understanding?
Well, you know, one of the things I think that's interesting about that, if I can just jump in here for a second, is the fact that if you look at the famous incident that occurred in Iran and other pilot incidents where, you know, they've gotten too close, all their instrumentation is shut down momentarily. All their guidance systems, all their power systems, much similar to what you described, Cliff, what happened to the guys, to the riggers out there. And you know what? I don't think, aside from maybe some speculation about the Mantell case, I don't think there's ever been one where they've allowed the vehicle to crash.
Well, back in 1952, when, or it was 52 when Harry Truman said, shoot them down.
Right.
There were, in 52, there were more military planes crashed
lost
with
ever.
Veteran pilots than any time. And then when they removed that, then within a year, then they had fewer crashes. So it's very strange.
You're probably absolutely correct. We've had Frank Fascino with us, and, you know, when you said that, it kind of jogged the memories of 52. So, yeah, but for the most part, it seems like after that time period, or more recently, they have not done anything to, you know, as far as we can tell, you know, the civilians, that, you know, this sort of thing is not going on.
Yeah, I agree. That's I don't think that it is now. It'd be interesting to see if President Obama said shoot him down, what would happen? No, it wouldn't be interesting. It'd be dreadful.
Yeah, it would.
Well,
even then,
it seems to me like that's kind of a foolhardy response. I mean, certainly our military personnel, what were they thinking?
Yeah, well, Einstein and some of the other top people said don't do that. That's going to cause problems.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I just, before you guys called, one of the speakers at our symposium at the end of July in Irvine, California, July 28th to 29th, 30th, sent us there was an email that he sent out, and it's retired Colonel John Alexander, 74 years old, who was he's going to be talking. And he just sent out in a Canadian newspaper this article. It says, 74-year-old former Green Beret A-team commander and developer of weapons at Los Alamos says UF disclosure has already occurred, and that the ultimate solution to UFOs is more complex than most people think.
So he says disclosure's already occurred.
Yep.
How?
It states a full article I haven't been able to pull up, but it says that the former presidents Truman, Carter, Reagan, and Soviet Union's Gorbachev have got disclosure has happened according to them. And he says he's got stacks of generals, including Soviet generals, who've come out and said UFOs are real.
Well, I guess they forgot to disclose it to the public when they disclosed it.
Well, yeah, that's kind of it. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? When there's
certainly makes you ponder what the intent is. If all of these enemies have all started cozying up, like the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah. So there's the disclosure aspect has been guarded very closely by those that know.
Now I'm really intrigued. Now I'm very intrigued because it's more complex. What does that mean?
Yeah, I am. The word complex really makes this situation complex.
How much more complex could it get, Cliff?
Yeah, well, good point.
It's an enigma. How's that go about the enigma inside of a puzzle, inside of a conundrum? Keep chasing your tail.
That's right. And that's one of the things that we have found. I think you probably know of Michael Schratt.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we had him on the show.
Yeah. Did Michael tell you about the number of clearances above what the President of the United States has?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I think it was like 13 or 18.
Yep.
And the top one being Majestic, which probably constitutes less than 50 people, I would suspect, that probably have all of the information and are controlling the things that are going on and about UFOs and why.
And what's even scarier about it is like the skull and bones of, you know, the UFO stuff is like, who are these people? Who has it been handed down to if it's still actually intact and it's really there? I mean, who are these super, super secret people and what are they hiding?
Well, I think they're hiding disclosure, quite frankly.
But I mean, what it's got to be. Look, either they're coming here like the old Twilight Zone one, where they're gonna eat us in the cookbook one, or they're coming here to exploit us, or they're coming here to invade us, or whatever. If we have to be secretive about it, that makes me all the more suspicious.
Yeah, I can't understand why they won't, and I don't think they're here to hurt us. I really don't. I think the laws of the universe, God, whatever it is still in control of what this is all about. And I think these ETs are probably more advanced spiritually than we are, if that's possible.
Well, you know, the other thing that comes to mind is, what if it's all a ruse? What if they can just keep everybody on edge with this stuff? You know, I mean, there was I can't remember where I read it, but you know, somebody said the ultimate conspiracy thing was, at first it would be, you know, like the terrorists, and then eventually it would move up to the point where it would be the alien invasion that was coming. And that alien invasion, what a better way to create fear, anxiety amongst the people than to all of a sudden spring on them, okay, we're going to disclose this information now, and we're all threatened. So we all got to stand shoulder to shoulder, you know, and do whatever it takes. Wouldn't it be horrendous if that was all a fabrication? And the benevolent aliens are standing by and watching this, shaking their heads.
Well, that's typical government protocol. They create a problem, and then they're the only ones that can solve it, which perpetuates their power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do with gas. In the 70s, we were short on gas, and we're all going to freeze to death because there wasn't enough gas to heat homes. Now there's now the global warming, and we don't have enough air conditioning to keep us cool. So
would suffer the most if a source of renewable power was made available to us?
Well, the oil industry, obviously.
And who has a ton of power?
There we go.
Bingo. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, even if you wanted to protect people, or you wanted to keep that cabal going and milk it for everything you could, I mean, you could still create fear and apprehension, and in the long run, you're going to get what you're going for. People will eventually be paying tons of money for gas.
That's right. And we have, there's the biggest oil and gas reserve in the United States has been discovered from northern Colorado up to the Canadian border, centered in North Dakota. And the geologists are now saying there is more gas in this area than three Saudi Arabias.
Really?
And it's they discovered it because of new technology. And when they're able to drill down a mile or mile and a half and then go at an angle, not a 90-degree angle, through the horizontal part of the formation that's producing the oil and gas. To give you an example, 3 miles from my house, we've had wells all the way around us, and I have a few wells that I'm involved with here. And, you know, $500 a month is about what the royalty is for most of the people around here, maybe $1,000. Well, they hit a well over there that is producing 1,000 barrels of oil a day. It started out at 3,000, but it's tapered off to 1,000. You take that times 100, and that's how much is made every day. So when you start talking bucks like that, we're talking some very significant things, and people are not going to let that get away because of new technology that doesn't require oil.
Yeah, and if in reality, wouldn't that be just such a shame that we're denying the whole culture of mankind, I mean the whole civilization of mankind, one of the greatest revelations ever?
Yes, yeah. And
on the basis of a commodity.
Yeah, and But oil has driven the world since it was discovered in Pennsylvania. When was that? In the 1800s?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been, ever since then, it's been the grease that runs this country and the world.
Well, interesting. So, what do you make of the reason why the ETs are here, Cliff?
Well, I think when you look at the Earth from space, here's this beautiful blue planet sitting out there with plenty of water and white clouds drifting around it. And I'm quite certain that anybody that's an explorer or a passerby would say, wow, look at that. Let's stop by there and see that place. And they may be just coming to see what this is all about on the way from one place to another. I don't know.
Yeah, we're kind of the frontier, though, too. We're out on the edge of our spiral arm.
We're the
wilderness out here. And
right.
We're living up to that name.
Yeah, I don't think we're on the regular trade route.
Well, you know, they don't you think they could be here studying us like we would do? Research?
Pardon me?
Don't you think that they're here studying us?
Oh, sure, most certainly, yeah. I mean, it's just like when Columbus came over, he took plants and all kinds of things back, tobacco, and picked up stuff and took it back to Europe, and things they hadn't seen. And of course, they brought things that contaminated the United States.
So
that's just part of it. But I wish I could answer that. I wish I had a definitive answer as to why they're here. It's just speculation, but it's speculation based on my mentality and from the research and education that we have about UFOs. Beyond that, why they're really here, I suspect somebody knows that's had disclosure, if that in fact is true, which is, I can't imagine John Alexander coming out just today and saying that. But this is pretty exciting stuff. We're living in exciting times, and I think that something's going to happen.
Cliff, in all the years that you've been doing this, tell us the case that you find the most remarkable, the one that stands out in your mind, whether it occurred in, 1995 or the day after yesterday. Or just tell us about not only that case, but maybe several other cases that you found particularly compelling.
Well, the three, I can give you three of the best ones that I really like, and that's the Shag Harbor incident that Don Berliner reported about off Nova Scotia. And that's, the book is called Dark Object. That is so well documented, and government people acknowledge it, and multiple witnesses. That one is just outstanding. Do you know about that case?
Yes, I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Okay, all right. So that one, the Iranian Air Force one that you were talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
is another one of the best ones. And it just so happened, when that happened, I was at the symposium, and I was sitting next to a gentleman, and he told me, I had discovered that he worked for the Jet Propulsion Lab, and he had retired just that year, or was going to retire. And one of the things that he told me, he said, yep, he says, that really did happen. He said, we had that one on our radar, or our satellite imaging. And he said there was, I think he told me there were, I don't recall the number, but there were like three others besides that one that was there in Iran. And then he says, whoops, I shouldn't have said that. But
all right,
now
we've got a caller on the line. That let's take this call. This is Race from Arkansas, a MUFON member. Race, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Doug, Grant. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Calling through Inception here and in this chat room, and I had two questions, actually. One, I would like to, I'm a section director in a little town here in Arkansas, and I would just like to get clear for the listeners about MUFON working with other organizations, such as Paranexus and others. What Clifford, if he could give us enlightenment on the protocol through MUFON, if that's okay, you know, that sort of thing. And my second question was, after 50, 60 years of quality UFO investigations by some very credible individuals over the years, why does the public seem to continuously go back to government disclosure to believe that the UFO phenomenon is real? And I'll thanks again, guys, for taking my call, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Race.
Thanks a lot. Good question.
Yeah, okay. The first question I think he asked was, what's our association with other...
More accurately, you know, about working with other organizations, and he mentioned such as Paranexus.
Yeah, we have no problems with... that I think what he might be alluding to is one of the comments that's been made in a negative aspect about MUFON is that if you belong, if you're a field investigator for MUFON, pardon me, you can't belong to another organization. That is not true. What we ask our people is, if you want to belong to Paranexus, Epic, or whatever else it might be, that's fine. That doesn't preclude you from belonging to MUFON. What we do ask people, though, is that from our work and efforts, that they don't give other organizations our proprietary information.
Yeah, that's
and use it. Use it to enhance theirs instead of us.
Right.
So that would be the only caveat on it, but we don't preclude people from doing that. That's. But anyway, that's where that is. And the second question was...
Oh, hell.
It was, why does the public... Why is the public not, you know... seriously, or why does the public rely on the government for disclosure when the evidence is overwhelming?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's the government is the organization that everybody looks to for entitlements and for leadership and protection. And if the government says it, then that's the way it is.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, that's not the way it is.
Good answer, you know, and so, you know, I think that was a great question that Race brought up. I mean, it's time to think for ourselves. It's been time to think for ourselves, and many people are thinking for themselves, and that's the thing. So, evaluate the evidence.
I think, Doug and Cliff, I think a lot of the media has to take some responsibility for the way they've reported it. They've never really investigated it. They've treated it as it's a joke, and anybody who sees it is an idiot and a moron who would believe that things could actually fly through the sky or come from a different planet, despite all the evidence and everything else. And so I think for your general, to steal a phrase from Sarah Palin, Joe Sixpack, you know, he may not even think about it in those kind of terms.
Right. Exactly.
He believes what goes down on TV. And just a real quick follow-up. When I asked you the question, I'm sorry if I was unclear, what I meant was in your personal experience, Cliff, the cases that you've investigated, have there been any cases that you found particularly compelling and that, you know, you could share with us tonight? Because you've got many years of experience doing investigations.
Well, the one I honestly have not had... a lot of really good ones. I think most of the field investigators will have 20 or 30 lights in the sky before they have anything of significance. But I did have one where we investigated, and this one really sticks in my mind because it takes a two-part event. The first thing that happened, these people from Colorado Springs reported a UFO sighting. So they said it was a triangular craft that was flying very slow. So we thought, well, we better get down there. So James Carrion and I went down to investigate this. We separated them. There was a man and a wife and a child. And it was a Sunday night. We interviewed them separately, by the way. And it was Sunday night. She was at the recliner watching TV by the window when she lights got her eyes. And here was this craft that was a rectangle. And they said it was very low, within maybe 1,000 feet. And above the mountains going across, not the mountains, in the foothills where they live, going very slow, and it had lights around it, and it looked like the ride lights on a carnival ride on the outside. And said it went down, and they knew how, they watched it, and it went down to a mountain. They knew how far away it was, and I think it was 5 miles. It turned, didn't bank, it just did a 90-degree pivot and went east. When it started doing that, she says, I'm going to go find out what that is. And she started chasing it, went out and got in her Cherokee and got on the road and started going down. And she went a couple of miles to the hospital, could still see it. And then the traffic stopped her and she couldn't keep up with it. But this, there was no sound. It was absolutely monstrous. And I don't know of any, black ops craft that is square, that if it's in the air, if it pivots, but there may be now, but this was just a phenomenal experience. All three of them reported the same thing, some discrepancies, but that is in the perception of the beholder, which when you're an investigator, you understand what people mean with their perceptions. But the overall sighting was reported exactly the same by all three. Okay, now Colorado Springs is where NORAD is, and Falcon Air Force Base, where they do a lot of missile control and that type of thing. There is a pilot that talked to me at a conference, flies a light plane. Well, actually, the guy that the husband of the wife that I just saw, his friend was a pilot, and light aircraft. And he says, you know, there's a place right over here southeast of Colorado Springs that's got this long runway and a tunnel. And there, you go by it, and they, if you act like you're going to go down and land, they start flashing a red light at you, which I guess, I, from what I understand, that means do not approach or danger, that type of thing. So he took the guy up, and they went out there, and sure enough, they got out there, and he says, it's right down there, and he was pointing to it, and there was that long runway that went into a mound of dirt tunnel type thing. You could see the black hole there, or the tunnel entrance, the portal, and they approached it and started to come in toward it, and here comes this red light. Well, there's a lot of strange things go on when in that type of area, because that was out in the absolute middle of nowhere. Southeast of Colorado Springs is desert.
Yeah.
So it may have been a black ops craft that we saw, but it's not. It wasn't anything that I have seen from Michael Schratt's information and the information that we have.
All right, so we're getting down to about our last 15 minutes, and there's a lot of talk in the chat rooms about, you know, the current stuff with MUFON. I know you've been on the radio programs and so forth, and you're probably dealing with it. You're probably sick of it. But
no, it's fine. It's fine, Doug.
I would like to ask you, what do you want to say about current MUFON events?
Well, the symposium's coming up. MUFON is well and happy. We've got in the last 3 months, we've had, I think it was 91 new field investigators. The public likes us. They respect us. When the media wants to know something, I get they come to us. I get calls every week from TV shows wanting to do stuff, the documentaries, people wanting information about books, and we're just well thought of in the outside community. Inside, again, we have some incredible investigators, volunteers. We have a lot of people that are doing an excellent job, and that's we've got. The Elaine Douglas reform deal is Elaine, as everybody knows now, has been and is a political activist. So she's always moving things in a direction that doesn't seem to be beneficial. But anyway, there were 91 signatories to her reform. But we checked the records, 26 of them don't belong. Another 10 we contacted wish they hadn't have signed and would like to have their names removed. So we're down to 40 or 50 people that are wanting reform. And it's been hectic. The good thing about everything, though, guys, is there's always something to learn and to get better from, even from a negative approach to things.
Mm-hmm.
And we have learned that there are some things we need to improve and to do better, and we are. So that, and I want, I'm not, when I say this, when I was talking about Elaine and the reform, there are some individuals on there that I respect immensely. We respect them enough that we are going to evaluate their request at this board meeting the end of July, and we'll dignify their request by responding back.
Oh, that's good.
So that's what's going on with that aspect of it. As far as what we're doing, we've got a new CMS2, which is going to be released. That's the case management system, and it's been really well thought out, and Jan Harzen, Tomas Carlson and John Jenner have done an outstanding job in putting CMS2 together, along when they started CMS1. And they've probably spent over $200,000 in man hours putting this together, which was all a labor of love and volunteers. That's just the kind of people that we have working in MUFON. We will be introducing our new iPhone application at the symposium and start beta testing that, and that'll be a three module type of app. The first module will be where you can get to our website and our store and subscribe and all the things that our website does, and the second will allow access to our archives like the website now provides. And the third module, which is the part that we're really excited about, is the Amber Alert type thing. For an example, if somebody in Maine sees a UFO and puts it into their computer or to their cell phone on the iPhone, they would it would, if you're subscribing to our to our iPhone app, you would be able to get that alert so that you know there was a sighting in Portland, Maine, if you want to be just local in Maine or Portland, you can put that in. If you want to be the Northeast or the United States, you can get every UFO alert that comes up on your cell phone, just like the Amber Alert. So we're really excited about those two new items, and the fact that 10 years ago we were averaging 200 sighting reports a month, now we're up to 500. So we're improving, we're getting better, we're doing a lot of good things.
Let me ask.
Well, you know, all good organizations have to evolve, otherwise they stagnate, and we've experienced that in Paranexus as well. So our hat's off to you, you know, because you got to improve from within.
That's right. Well, if you're static, you're not growing.
That's right.
Here's a question from the Inception Radio Network chat room. and I'll read it word for word as requested. Is it true that Chuck Modlin, backed up by Marie Malzahn? It just flipped up on me. Don't type. Let me start over. Is it true that Chuck Modlin, backed up by Marie Malzahn, pressured star team manager Chase Kletsky to break her promises to the state directors? If so, wasn't that a wrong thing to do?
I have no understanding of what the question is. Let me explain to you what the star team. This was something that was mentioned last couple of nights ago on another radio show. And since that time, I went back and checked out the history of the star team. Now, what I'm going to tell you now is research from what we have done. The star team originally started by James Carrion. It was his idea in a rapid response team in 2007, the late 2007. In 2008, it was starting to be implemented. And this is all in the March, April, May, and August 2008 journals. So people can research that themselves and find out what was going on. At that point in 2008, the end of 2008, we were working with BAS, Bigelow Aerospace.
Mm-hmm.
And we were negotiating with them. So we finally got an agreement worked out through 2008, which then was implemented February 1st, 2009. The original star team had seven members. Richard Lang was the star team manager at that point, appointed by James Carrion. And these individuals carried over to the star team that we started up again after the Bigelow project ended January 30th, 2010. So that's the history of where it was. Chuck Modlin was, in fact, part of the original seven because of his technological skills. He has incredible skills there. I do know that Chase Kletsky called me and was in tears over a conversation that she had with Chuck Modlin. Now, I do not know what the conversation was. I had heard her side, but beyond that, I don't know. And Marie Malzahn is the director of investigations, and she appointed Chuck to Modlin to the position that he has today. So there was no conspiracy, to my knowledge, by Marie and Chuck Modlin to cause Chase Kletsky problems. To this day, Chase has not called me and told me why she resigned as the star team manager.
Okay. Great. Well, I hope that clears up, the issue. And, you know, we have a few minutes left. One of the things that I want to speak out on, because I am the executive director, the founder of Paranexus, along with help from many others, including co-founder Yari Mikola. These organizations, folks, are not easy to run. They are not. You might think, well, Paranexus is just a little podunk organization. Well, you know what? It's not. It may be small, but it ain't podunk, and it's not an easy thing. You talk, Cliff, you talked about $200,000 in man hours. Man, I'm sitting here thinking, tabulating the hundreds of thousands of dollars in man hours that I've put into it personally, not to mention other people too.
Exactly.
And when you're dealing with a board, I mean, what was it? Gosh, it's been a year and a half ago that I Paranexus was mine. I owned it, and I intentionally wanted to create a 501c3 with a board of directors. In other words, I wanted to give it away, so that it would outlive me. And so we have a great board of directors. I mean, we've had our own internal stuff. And people are people. People have different things. Stuff happens in every organization. And you know, they'll make all kinds of stuff about it. All the drama queens and kings of the media will spin it every which way and create all this drama, you know, where none really exists. And you know, all we're trying to do here, and I'm sure you agree with this, we're trying to find the truth. We just want to know what's going on. We want to work together. You know, people, and that's the whole problem with the paranormal field in general. And I think, and I'll stick to this, ufology is much better than the ghost hunting side of things in terms of petty nitpicking and not sharing and not working in competitiveness. It's just, honestly, I'm to the point where I'm almost disillusioned with it. But the point I'm trying to make, and this is in your behalf, Cliff, and other organizations, of those of us who are really trying to do a good thing here. And we're not trying to piss people off. We're not trying to lie. You know, if people talk about transparency. Well, you know, this came up last week on our show. And there's two things, and I'm not trying to preempt your interview, Cliff, here. But if you'll hang on with us just for a few minutes, there's a point I got to make because it does affect you too. You know, talking about transparency, you know, our board is appointed by each other. We do not have voting members. And people can gripe all they want about that, but that ain't going to happen with Paranexus. Sorry, folks, because it is hard enough to direct an organization without having a ton of different, you know, unknowns in it. We're trying to do the best thing. Another thing that so we're transparent. We have nothing to hide. And this came up last week, and I defended it, and I'm going to defend it again. When you're on an active investigation, you can't disclose a bunch of stuff for a myriad of reasons. You know, none, the least of which are, you know, you could think about MUFON. Think about the UFO field. I mean, for crying out loud, if the government is trying to mix everything up, which I think they are, MUFON's, you know, the longest, the biggest. Why wouldn't they target that and try to disrupt things? And so if you're disclosing facts about a case while you're investigating it, you're opening yourself up. That's just stupid, you know. And plus, there's another aspect to it. If we were to disclose things about an active investigation, how are we going to present it? Are we going to say, yeah, we saw this? Well, we're not going to give that, folks. It's when we get the investigation over with, we'll present it. That's the point of it.
But, you know, the larger issue here, too, is one of ethics, and that's one of confidentiality.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether you are MUFON or whether you're any other, you know, agency. If you enter into an agreement with a client that you're going to maintain their confidentiality, you know, that's a binding agreement, and it's an ethical breach if you do anything less. And in an investigation, if you reveal details or what, you know, tidbits, you're tainting the whole outcome of what you're trying to investigate.
And another thing that came up, Cliff, too, last week in the show directly regarding MUFON was, and I don't know your policy on this, I know our policy on this, and that's about allowing those with a criminal past, a recent especially criminal past, to be investigators. And our policy is no. We're not going to put an investigator with a criminal background into somebody's home. It's not going to happen. We have a policy of 10 years. I don't know what you guys have.
Doug, ours has just been in the last 2 or 3 years that we start doing background checks, which really upset some people. But so I have defined that to say that what we're doing is now doing a criminal background check of public records.
Right.
And we certainly don't want sex scenes running around out there,
absolutely,
or child molesters. That would just be an awful situation.
Especially if they're representing your organization.
Oh.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is we have caught 5, 2 pedophiles, 1 sex offender, and 2 with very recent criminal backgrounds. When a person gets out of prison, if the crime's bad enough, they're usually on parole for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Or maybe 3 or 4. I don't know. And so we this is just not a good thing. So we feel,
absolutely,
we have to have some type of control over the people that we're sending out in our name.
Well, you know, when Paranexus, when we were the spirit team before we evolved, we tried to do something similar to what MUFON's doing, the chapters, but for us, we didn't have the manpower. And one of our greatest fears, and I know Doug will back me on this, was the quality of our directors. And
right.
how could we possibly monitor them? So we build a code of ethics, but still that's not an insurance policy that you're going to get ethical behavior out of those people. So after a while and some bad experiences, we decided that that was not feasible for us to do.
Yeah. Well, we have that's the other thing we're introducing is our new revised and updated state director's handbook, which sets out the protocol that we expect them to follow. And we're bringing them in to help them, because sometimes we're not in the field. We don't know what really may work or may not work, and we may put something in there that's not feasible. So at the state director's meeting at the 28th of July in Irvine, we're having the state directors come up with better ideas and solutions, incorporating them into it. That'll help us a lot more when we know that they have an input as to what's going on. But it won't be that people won't be allowed to jeopardize what our mission is or our goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's I'm glad to hear that. I knew you guys had a good policy on it, but I just wanted to restate that because that was an issue. And the comment that was made a week ago was, well, you know, criminals can find out, you know, UFO facts just as well as anyone else. And, you know, honestly, it was short-sighted. It was spoken by somebody who is not a director or an international director of an organization such as ours. And, you know, you got to keep that the high ethics, you know. Our
yes.
motto is do no harm.
Right. You know, one of the things, Doug, I'm so glad you and Grant have just said what you said about your organization, because one of the things that we find is that integrity is paramount, and we just have to have good quality people, and I really do think we do have.
Mm-hmm.
We need to, but the people that are seem to be the complaining the most, few of them, if any, have a business background to understand how a corporation runs, especially a nonprofit, which is a significantly different animal than a for-profit.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have to have people that can step out of one role and see it from a more, I mean, it's okay to wax philosophically and speculate and everything else, but when it comes down to brass tacks and you got to do a business, you got to have people that think that way. And, you know, our experience has been similar to what you've had. We've had people that haven't been of that ilk, and, you know, and as a result, they're no longer with us. But we've had other issues, too. But much like MUFON, we've evolved and we've kept on changing, and that's and we've embraced that change just like you guys are doing. So our hats are off to you. You know, you're doing a great job.
Yeah, and
thank
you know,
you guys, I appreciate those.
And I will state this publicly too. You know, for 3 years, I've wanted to officially contact MUFON and say, hey, we're here. We love you guys. We love to work. We're not a direct copy of MUFON because we don't just deal with ufology. You know, we're trying to do something, you know, educate, and that's one of the primary things we do is this radio program. It's aimed at anomalous researchers. It's not necessarily aimed at the public. It's trying to improve the field because, you know, I've been around the block a time or two as well, and, you know, we need top-notch people. And those who are listening to this, you know, what do you want? Don't you want the truth? Well, work with us. You know, don't complain. We have way too many complainers in all parts of human society anyway. You know, ask what you can do to help. If you want to make changes, fair enough. Come and be a part of it. Walk with us for a while, and then give us those good ideas. I know, Cliff, I know that's what you've said it. You know, come and be a part of it.
Yeah.
Don't bitch. Come and help.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of people lose sight of the fact that when you want to do research, it's not all fun and games, and it requires discipline, and it requires commitment. And a lot of times people lose sight of that. They want to do something that's fun, and when it stops being fun and you got to do a report or you're out in the field till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and you got to get up and go to work the next day, it's not so much fun.
No, that's right. And the other thing that amazes me is if people would spend as much time and effort and money on MUFON that they spend on trying to do things against MUFON, we might have the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also think, because you guys have been the tip of the spear for so many years, you've been targeted, ruthlessly
yes.
targeted. And you know what? Your people have been subjected to ridicule. There's been, you know, allegations of mole this and mole that. Well, if I was a government agency or if I felt the need or compelled to protect information, I'm going to do everything in the world I can to discredit an organization that's trying to approach the phenomena in an academic manner.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, one of the, you know, I keep hearing the word mole, and I uh-huh. there's a mole on the MUFON board. I don't know what a mole means. Does it
a
mean
spy?
It's a spy from what though? The
government.
From what agency? What? Who would?
Someone. The rumor has been that circulated is that the mole is there. And the mole, whoever it may be, and I'm not talking to current events. I'm talking about this is past. This is ancient history. That the mole was there to specifically plant disinformation and go out of their way to undermine the mission of MUFON.
See, I've worked with all of these people, everyone on the board. Anywhere. From, excuse me, 4 years to 12 years, and I know them all personally, and there isn't an evil bone in any one of these people's bodies. They're just good, decent, hardworking, wanting to get to the bottom of it people. If somebody wants to infiltrate MUFON, they don't need to, number one. Why spend the manpower and hours and money doing that? When they can get everything they want off the internet, they can monitor our emails, they can monitor our telephone calls, all of this. And so they're going to find out everything anyway. Why would they put somebody inside?
Well, just by virtue of the fact of starting that story, they've accomplished their goals, whether there was ever anybody there or not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just that whole idea of trying to make you guys look less credible. And I mean, an outsider could have just started that rumor, and there's no factual basis to it, none whatsoever.
None.
And
none.
But it catches fire, catches wind, you know, because other people of the same ilk are going to go, look, well, we told you, they're on the lunatic fringe, you know, Paranex,
yeah.
and you know, they don't know what they're talking. Ha 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 ha! Laugh it off, you know.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So you know, when you're trying to do legitimate research. And you have people that approach it that way. It's really unfortunate that there's, and it speaks largely to what is their agenda.
You're right.
What's their
yeah,
agenda
yeah.
that they want to attack an honest organization that's trying to get at the bottom of what's going on?
Yeah, that's you're right on. That's exactly
because
right, Grant.
Threatened.
So yeah, well, it's too bad. But then, you know, there's always going to be people. Maybe that's why the ETs don't make contact. They might have contact with the people that are negative.
Well, you know, I think we've gone about it in a really great way tonight. Kind of coming full circle, we've come back to you know the larger issues here because I think there's none of us here that are in disagreement. About this phenomenon and its existence and the implications of what might be going on. But we're faced with I think sometimes a more powerful adversary who wants to continue to keep the cloak over things and not disclose information that we're entitled to.
Right. Right. And it's a shame. Maybe there's more to it than I know, but I can't imagine that the world religions, the socioeconomic part of the world would collapse
right.
with disclosure.
I agree.
It doesn't compute.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Well, I've said to Doug many times,
yeah.
This is my theory, Cliff. For the first 24 hours, the whole world will be up in arms. It will be on every newspaper, every, you know, we'll be on news from dawn to the following day,
Yeah.
Right along. And then within 72 hours or maybe a week or two later, everybody will go back to what they're doing. The religion will be in an uproar. They'll have all the talking heads on, and then life will go on as it was. Because there's
right.
people that, regardless of whatever the disclosure is, will never accept the reality and just keep on going in their own little bubble.
Yeah, it's a little bit like what my wife is like. She says, I believe they exist, but she says, they've never bothered me. I can't do anything about it. I'm not fussing with it. She says, you have your fun.
Good answer.
And you know what? Maybe that's the best way to look at it, because it's acceptance. It's saying, yeah, I accept the possibility. If you got more information, let me know. But you know what? It's not that far-fetched.
Yeah, and I think that may be a lot of what people think, and that's fine. That's fine. I just know there's something there, and I want to find out what it is.
Hey, Cliff, before we conclude the show, Race, who had called in a little while ago, he's told me in the chat room, he wanted me to tell you this. He says, I forgot to tell Clifford that the boots on the ground support him all the way. We know he is a great guy, thrust into a tough situation, and he's doing a fantastic job, and we are all behind him and MUFON.
Wow, that's wonderful. I appreciate that. That is so good to hear.
Well, you guys are doing a great job. You know, you've been around a long time. You know, there's always stuff that goes on, problems that have to be dealt with, negative people. You know, you can't, and I'll... You know, I know you know this, but I'm just going to tell it to you from, you know, your counterpart over here at Paranexus. Don't give it any energy. Yes, you got to say some things publicly, I understand. But, you know, don't give it too much energy. Don't let it sidetrack you, because that's all it's serving to do. Keep up the good work. Keep doing what you guys are doing. And we hope to have a long and great relationship with you guys and just... You know, we tip our hats to you and wish you the best.
Well, and we to you too, Paranexus, and you guys, Doug, Grant, the rest of you, you guys keep up your good work too, because between all of us, we may come to the solution, the answer.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
And the other thing is too, Cliff, you know, if you or other members of your staff want to come on the show periodically, give us information about cases you find that are of interest, or new breaking news, by all means, we would welcome that.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you. Would Jamie be your contact, or my contact?
Yep, you can book it through Jamie. You can contact me anytime, Grant anytime. We're on, you know, Paranexus. Just
okay. Ask you to send me an email with your email address?
I'll send it to you. Yeah, I'll get it to you right
away. Of course, and we would be happy. And I mean, we know that your people do research too, and we've had some of them on the show in the past. And if any of your members are doing interesting research, and they want to get the word out, they're welcome to come on board. You know, we try to have a real friendly environment here, and laid back, and promote, let the guests promote what they're doing in their research.
Okay, that's wonderful. You guys are great. Thank you so much.
Well, Cliff, thanks so much for taking your time. We went just a little bit over. I apologize for that, but it was going so well. I wanted to give you time, and I wanted to say a few things, so it was half selfish and half out of respect for you.
Well,
did I spend that one okay?
Yeah, you did great.
Hey, that works great, Doug. I honestly really appreciate what you've had to say, because you are right where we are, as far as a nonprofit and how it should be run. So you guys keep up the good work. I really appreciate that.
You as well, and come back again sometime. Anytime.
Yeah, come back and visit us and sit down and chit-chat with us. We really enjoyed it tonight, Cliff. Nice meeting.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. You guys take care. Have a good evening.
Yeah, you too.
Sir. Bye.
And we appreciate
it.
Thanks, Cliff. We appreciate everyone hanging with us a little bit over. Of course, not everyone did, but a lot of you did, and we appreciate that. We appreciate those listeners.
I like old times, huh, Doug?
We went 2 hours.
Pretty amazing now in retrospect.
We've been on 3.5 years almost here, Grant, and we've just checked tonight. We're just under 200,000 archive listens, downloads, and people are listening to the show at the rate of around 1,300-1,400 a week. So
we appreciate all the listeners. You know, without them, we'd be nowhere. And it's a real pleasure. We just wish we heard from you guys more.
Yeah, let us know.
Contact us. Let us know about ideas for the show. If you want to be on the show, we want to have you, you know. I mean, even if you think your idea is outlandish, run it past us. You might be surprised.
Yeah, and we're looking for good folks for Paranexus, for volunteers. We need help with website stuff, technical stuff. I mean, we'd love to shoot forward. We don't have the help. We don't have the people.
But I want to throw in a word of caution. You can't start off on the board first.
Yeah. And, you know, it probably wouldn't take all that long. But just, you know, come and join us. We're partners. We're peers. We're all trying to work for a common good. So be a part of that. And if, you know, if that's not your fancy, well, come and join Paranexus anyway. You know, help support Paranexus. Your memberships, donations are what helps to support us and keep us going. And if you have ideas for a positive change, let us know. You know, we'll look at anything. You know,
Doug, if you don't mind me dropping, you know, like a possible little tidbit that we may be doing some Doug and I, before we went on air, talked about doing some research, doing some investigations again, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that and our motivation behind it and what we may be investing in. I think you'll find it intriguing.
Yes, indeed. Now, next week, we're going to be talking about past lives and past life regressions and kind of how that all works with spirit world and so forth, or what it might work. So, you know, join us next week with Melissa Watts, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern. Folks, have a great week. It's been real, it's been fun, and it's even been real fun.
Hey, thanks for all your calls and all the information in the chat room. We love you guys. Thanks for all the feedback. We appreciate it.
Good night.
Have a great weekend, folks. Bye-bye.